athletes. Take your mark, get set. It's time for the Addict to Athlete podcast. Hey everybody out there, Coach Blue Robinson here. Thank you all for downloading, sharing, and subscribing to the podcast. We appreciate you jumping on, giving us a review, and sharing this podcast with anyone who may be struggling with addiction, mental health, overcoming trauma. Shoot, you name it, we have content through the Addict to Athlete podcast that I know can help. Also, I want to thank our Patreon subscribers. You guys are definitely making it easier for us to get this message out further, and I want to thank you for doing it. Shoot, one day we hope for Addict to Athlete to be our big boy jobs, and so getting this content out further to those who truly need it is only possible because of you, the Patreon subscribers. And I want to thank you all so much for jumping on and using the Extracurricular Recovery Playbook. Each week, if you subscribe to the Patreon channel, you can get content related to addiction recovery, overcoming adversities, pushing through some mental awareness, and also getting through some traumatic experiences in life. These are sometimes multiple drops each week on the Extracurricular Recovery Playbook that gives you access to our addiction recovery resources. So jump on patreon.com/addicttoathlete for more information. And again, thank you all for contributing and helping out in those efforts. As we've got a lot of holiday festivities on the horizon, our Project Elf is up and running. If you'd like to assist Team Addict to Athlete in providing Christmas and things that will help families get through the holidays with a little less stress, please contact us. You can do so by jumping on and instant messaging Marissa, or you can email her at marissa@addicttoathlete.org. So there's been quite a bit of request that we've had lately, specifically about not just how to overcome like traumatic situations and issues, but taking a deeper dive into some of the residual effects of what trauma does to us. Now, there's two kind of methods of trauma. You've heard a lot of the post-traumatic stress disorder, the PTSD, but more so, I've been seeing some interesting issues in some of the folks I've been working with that actually qualify for a more severe diagnosis of overcoming trauma. And what I've seen is that they've actually labeled this CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder. So I thought today we'd take a little bit deeper dive on trauma, on the emotional and the physiological aspects of what trauma can do to you. And this seems to be the most common theme in addiction. It is the most common theme when I work with folks that have some mental struggles and some situational issues that put them into positions where they feel like they have to use something, avoid something, or completely neglect an aspect of their life to get through some of the heavier times. And so, listeners, I want to stress upon your hearts how significant trauma is in all of what we do when it comes to overcoming adversity, overcoming addictions, and so much more. Trauma is the number one cause of addiction and addiction dependence issues. So maybe in order for you to understand maybe my own philosophy on how I believe addiction kind of grabs hold of our hearts and kind of overtakes our lifestyles, I need you to understand Blue's identification of addiction. And this is, again, the world according to me, just things I've noticed in the over 20 years I've been doing this. And I found patterns, you guys. I found patterns in the way that things happen that introduce people into a method of coping. And typically, it's substance abuse. It's finding something that we believe works, and for a certain amount of time, it does suppress and hide the pain. Now, it's kind of an interesting concept. You see, over the years, I've noticed that with these, I guess, similarities, I've discovered that in my own understanding and just the things that I've seen, and it seems to work for me, I find that people typically gravitate towards using a substance to overpower an emotion that they're feeling. And what I mean by that is 9.5 times out of 10, I find that people typically use a substance. They find something that works because of something they've experienced that hurts. Let's call it trauma. Something they've experienced has not felt good, has hurt, has scared them, has pushed them into a corner of life that's created a real need, a significant need to not feel that. And I'm telling you, it deals with something that hurts. there's that one small percentage, I think, of people that go out there and they can use a drug, they can use a substance, they can find something that works. And what they'll do is they'll use it as a coping mechanism. And that coping mechanism that they find really does work for quite a good, strong period of time. But then eventually it will overpower them as well. So what I've discovered is that that trauma that they've experienced and then their willingness to avoid it turns into a substance of choice, which residually will become an addiction. And that's when the dependence kicks in. And that's where the heavier roadblocks of life will significantly impair their progression. So if we look at what trauma does to an individual, we have to know what it is. So when bad things happen, it can take a while to get over the pain and feel safe again. And you can see this through windows of not just physical threat, but also like seeing something, being part of a family system by which there's not a lot of emotional safety, or maybe there's an abusive parent or an addicted parent. It doesn't really matter as to how or why the trauma is being introduced into an individual. But what you have to understand is that the pain is going to be the same. And what I mean by that is it's going to take a lot of time for you to truly understand that what you're seeing or what you're experiencing isn't supposed to be happening. So, okay, listeners, what is emotional and psychological trauma? Think about emotional and psychological trauma as being the result of an extraordinarily stressful event that absolutely shatters your sense of security, kind of makes you feel helpless in a very dangerous situation or a dangerous world. Psychological trauma can leave you struggling with upsetting emotions, powerful memories, and anxiety that absolutely doesn't seem to go away. It can also leave you feeling very emotionally numb, disconnected, and unable to trust people. See, these traumatic experiences often, they involve a threat of life or safety. And this is why those situations are so intense. But any situation that leaves you feeling emotionally overwhelmed, maybe emotionally isolated, can result in trauma. Even if it doesn't involve physical harm, just the actual viewing of it, being a participant in it, you know, being a subject within that trauma is what kind of deep sets some of these emotional issues. The more frightened and helpless you feel in that situation, the more likely you are to be traumatized. So emotional and psychological trauma can be caused by a one-time event, such as a car accident, maybe an injury, a violent attack, especially if that attack or situation was unexpected or happened in early childhood. There's ongoing and relentless stress that can be subject to emotional and physiological trauma, such as maybe living in a crime-ridden neighborhood, battling life-threatening illnesses, having family members go through those things, experiencing traumatic events that occur repeatedly, such as bullying, being subject to a domestic violence situation, or even childhood neglect. And they can look like very commonly overlooked causes, such as maybe a surgery that happened early in your life. Maybe it was a sudden death of someone close to you, a parent, a sibling. Maybe it could be a significant breakup of a relationship that you felt very connected to, or feelings of humiliation or deep disappointment, especially if someone was deliberately cruel to you. You see, coping with trauma of a natural or man-made disaster can present in unique challenges, even if you weren't directly involved in the event. And in fact, while it's highly unlikely that any of us will be a direct victim of a terrorist attack or a plane crash or a mass shooting, we've already been bombarded by horrific images and social media and news report sources. And those people who have been in those situations, we emote with them. And viewing these images over time can overwhelm your nervous system and create traumatic stress. I've seen this significantly in the last several years with clients I've worked with who specifically have had very traumatic experiences simply by watching news reports, seeing only the negative perspective, which media does to you, and it creates a false understanding that everything out there is bad, everything out there is horrible, and the situations we're currently in right now with our, you know, with our emotions, our government emotions, all these social economic issues, they're creating trauma, and we're seeing it, and it's being reinforced and reinforced by every news report, every Fox News report, every CNN report, and we get put in these little, like, you know, camps together, and if you don't like what we like, then you're against us, and it traumatizes us all, even if you think you're battling something positive. Whatever causes your trauma, whether it happened years ago or yesterday, can make huge challenges in healing moving forward if you don't identify it. So let's take a little turn into what happens within childhood trauma and the risk of seeing future trauma. Well, traumatic events, as we've talked about, can help, you know, hinder your progression, and it can happen to absolutely anyone. You're more likely to be traumatized by an event if you've already experienced heavy stress or being you know, heavy laden with something significantly emotional when you were a child. Having suffered maybe a series of losses, maybe traumatized through bullying at school, maybe moving frequently, like happened to me when I was growing up, the earlier the trauma that occurs in childhood, the more challenging it's going to be for you as an adult not to resort back to some of your old coping mechanisms. Childhood trauma can result from anything that disrupts your sense of safety, a child's sense of safety. And for me specifically, listeners, it was a very unstable, abusive lifestyle I was put in for many years of my youth. Living in unstable or unsafe environments, separation from a parent, serious illness, intrusive medical procedures, you know, sexual, physical, or verbal abuse, domestic violence, neglect, abandonment. Experiencing trauma in childhood can result in severe, long-lasting effects. And so think about it. When childhood trauma is not resolved, a sense of fear and helplessness, it carries over into your adulthood. I've seen this in so many of the people I've worked with specifically struggling with addiction. Setting the stage for future trauma, meaning we're always on the lookout for another traumatic experience. And a lot of times we will placate our lives to almost create it, to put ourselves in those situations because we know it's inevitable. However, if your trauma happened many years ago, there are steps I know that you can take to overcome the pain, learn to trust and reconnect with others, and regain your sense of emotional balance. So there are symptoms to psychological trauma. And I really want you to pay attention to this because we've all experienced unpleasant situations, things. How can some people seem to rebound and get back in life better than others? Well, we all react to trauma in very different ways, experiencing a very wide range of physical and emotional reactions. You've seen this. There's no right or wrong way to think, feel, or respond so that you don't judge your own reactions to those of other people. Your responses are normal reactions to abnormal events. Think about that for a moment. Your responses are normal reactions to abnormal events. So emotional and psychological trauma, it puts these situations into so many variations of acting out, of withdrawal, of fear, of anxiety, that it's kind of important to understand the emotional and psychological symptoms that are attached to it. Things like shock, denial, disbelief, you know, things like confusion, maybe difficulty concentrating, anger, irritability, mood swings, anxiety, and fear. You guys, it's the same thing you'll see through having, you know, deep senses of guilt or shame or self-blame, withdrawing from others, feeling sad or hopeless, feeling disconnected or numb. The physical sides of this is you'll have things like insomnia or repeated nightmares, an overall sense of fatigue, maybe being startled easy. That's one of mine. Marissa laughs because she's like, you do realize that more people live in this house, but I am easily startled because growing up, I never knew what kind of monster was around the corner because my monsters came in forms of very abusive stepfathers. So being startled easily, kind of funny, but like comes from somewhere. Difficulty concentrating, racing heartbeats, maybe some edginess or agitation, aches and pains, muscle tension. There are so many symptoms that derive from trauma that it's super important to start tuning into yourself so you can self-identify where this is coming from. I shouldn't be scared or nervous or timid to walk around my own house knowing that there are children who try to scare me because they think it's funny, but also because I should know they're here, but it's that post-traumatic stress that's kind of always at the forefront. We're going to jump into that in a moment. Healing from trauma. We've talked about some of the source codes to it. Trauma symptoms basically can last for days, months, but should gradually fade away as you process the unsettling event. But even when you're starting to feel better, you may be troubled from time to time by some painful memories or emotions, especially in response to a trigger such as an anniversary or an event or something that reminds you of the trauma. That's the post-traumatic stress that seems to catch us at our most vulnerable. So if your psychological trauma symptoms don't ease up, or if they seem to be getting worse, you'll find that you might become unable to move on from the event for a prolonged period of time, listeners. You may experience, again, post-traumatic stress disorder, more commonly known as PTSD. While emotional trauma is a normal response to a disturbing event, it becomes PTSD when your nervous system gets kind of stuck and you remain in that psychological shock. Almost like you're unable to make sense of what's happened or process the emotions. And this is so significant in this day and age. And the understanding of post-traumatic stress disorder is increasing. But it is very intriguing to me as to why, when I'm an adult and I know that I'm safe, that there were situations before I truly understood how to process these things that seemed like I couldn't shake them. Trusting adults, trusting authority, you know, being able to be a father to my children because of, you know, how I was fathered. There's so many attributes to this that kind of got me, you know, really intrigued about why is it easier for some to click through and more difficult for others. So whether or not that traumatic event involves maybe physical harm or death, you, even as a survivor, must cope with the loss, at least, you know, temporarily, putting into consideration your sense of safety. The natural reaction to loss, we know, is grief. People who have lost a loved one, they go through a grieving process, right? You've heard the cycle of addiction, of trauma, the cycle of grieving. You know this. I think there's tips that can help you cope with that sense of grief and heal from the trauma and move forward, not forgetting and not forgiving, but for healing. So think about it, the trauma recovery, okay? I want to give you a few tips here, listeners. First of all, you know this from team addict to athlete. Number one, get moving. Trauma disrupts your body's natural equilibrium. It freezes you in a state of hyperarousal and fear. And as you start to burn off some of that adrenaline and those endorphins that you've produced because of the situation, exercise and movement can actually help repair your nervous system. Listeners, this is what I found when I started Addict to Athlete. When I would take people out and we would run with them early on Team Addict to Athlete, I realized that as we were running, they started talking to me about their trauma. They started telling me about things they were feeling, more so than in my office where I thought it was emotionally safe and balanced. Now, here's the thing is it was, but movement, I found, created momentum. Movement created process. Movement created movement. And I loved it because I thought I was groundbreaking something extremely new. Later on, I would find out that it's actually called EMDR therapy, which we're going to talk about on this podcast today. Eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. It is a mechanism that is proven to help you overcome trauma, and we'll get there. But 30 minutes of exercise every day or more will help you in areas and ways that you probably don't believe is possible. Even if it's 10-minute spurts throughout the day, it's just as beneficial. But exercise is the rhythm that engages, you know, that movement, left-right brain stimulation, as I'm going to teach you about what EMDR is in this podcast, exercises the rhythmic portions of your body, your arms, your legs, walking, running, swimming, biking, playing ball, dancing. It works best because it's left-right brain stimulation. Add a mindfulness element to it. Think about what we do on Team Addict Athlete when we run, right? So instead of focusing on your thoughts or distracting yourself while you're exercising, you really focus on your body and how you feel as you move. This truly works. I've seen it 10 years now, people. Notice the sensation in your feet hitting the ground. For example, the rhythm of your breathing, the rhythm of your cadence, the rhythm of your movement, and feel the wind on your skin as you're rock climbing or boxing or weight training producing martial arts. It makes things easier because you don't realize that you're processing all this stuff through your movement. After all, you need to focus on your body movements during exercise in order to avoid injury. So as you're processing your body and you're feeling this, guess what's happening? You're beginning to unlock some of those attributes and process some of those pent-up feelings because it's physiological at that point, and you begin to feel better. The problem is that most people don't want to do this because it takes motivation and it can be scary, but when you do it with someone who's trained or someone that you care about, you may not realize the benefit until it's pointed out. Tip number two, do not hide. Following a trauma, you may want to withdraw from others, but listen, isolation only makes things worse. Connecting with others face-to-face will help you heal. It's the way that we're designed. We are not designed to be alone. We are designed to be social creatures. So you've got to make efforts for those relationships, and you've got to spend a lot of time not avoiding situations, people, places, things. Do not isolate. You don't have to talk about your trauma. Connecting with others doesn't have to involve you talking about the trauma. In fact, for some people, that could just make things worse. You know, comfort comes from feeling engaged and being accepted by others. Now, naturally, it will come forward, but for the time being, just be with someone. Be with people you love. Ask for support. That's what Team Addict Athlete is here for. That's what Coach Blue is here for. That's what Coach Jensen's there for. Ask for some support. While you don't have to talk about the trauma itself, it's important that you have someone to share your feelings with face to face. Someone who will listen intently and actively without judging you. And you know you all have people in your circles that could be that way. Turn to a trusted family member, a friend, a counselor, a therapist, maybe someone in clergy. Do something face to face with someone so that you can have that real human interaction. Again, like Team Addict Athlete produces, participate in social activities. Even if you don't feel like it, do normal activities that other people do. Activities that have nothing to do with the trauma experience will absolutely help you overcome some of those difficulties connecting. And on that point, reconnect with old friends. If you've had relationships that have been hurt, reconnect with them. Jump in there. Join a support group for survivors of trauma. You know, connecting with others who have similar feelings and listening to how they're overcoming will only gain you more tools for your box that will help you as you go through the process. I have found, again on Team Addict Athlete, that if you lose yourself in volunteerism and you volunteer by helping others, you can have a great sense of effort and strength. You can help the helpless. Because as you become whole and understand your trauma and as you process it, you can then become an instrument for someone else to do the same. Your strength, by reclaiming your sense of power, is going to help others. Your mess will become a message. And you can do that by making new friends, by making new acquaintances. Join Team Addict Athlete. Do these things if you're feeling disconnected. And I'm telling you, I know it's hard, but one of the most beautiful things is having a team behind you. Tip number three, okay, self-regulate your nervous system. What does this mean? Well, no matter how agitated, anxious, or out of control you might feel, it's important to know that you can change your arousal system and calm yourself. You can do this. Not only will it help you relieve some of the anxiety associated with the trauma, but it will also kind of engineer a greater sense of control. Things like mindful breathing, okay, grounding techniques. If you are feeling disoriented, confused, or upset, practice mindful breathing. There's a quick way to calm yourself by doing so. Simply take 60 breaths. Okay, focus on the breath in and the breath out, and just concentrate on the oxygen in, peaking it to the top of your lungs, oxygen out. Your sensory input will not allow you to focus on more than one thing at a time. As many people think that they are amazing multitasking, that is simply not true. It is not possible for your brain to think about two things at once. It cannot happen. You're good at switching from one thing to another, but you are not a multitasker. No one is. It doesn't work that way. So when you focus on one thing, your attention is drawn there. So if you simply want to change your mind, you've got to change the way that you think about these things. Grounding techniques like breathing exercises are huge for this. Sensory input is another one. Does a specific sight or smell or taste make you feel calm? Animals, listening to music. These things are ways that we can kind of, tug ourselves out of that negative thinking and that traumatic re-experiencing of things that have happened. Everyone responds to sensory input a little bit differently, I've noticed. So experiment with what brings some stress relief. Do some stress relieving techniques and find what works best for you. By staying grounded, you're going to be able to stay in the present. Sit on a chair, feel your feet on the ground. Feel your back against the chair. Look around you. Pick six objects that have maybe the color red or blue in them. Notice them. Notice your breathing while you're doing this. The deeper and calmer it can be. Grounding tools such as these, you guys, help significantly. Allow yourself to feel what you feel when you feel it, okay? It sounds kind of silly. Allow yourself to feel what you feel when you feel it. Acknowledge your feelings about the trauma. As they arise, accept them, okay? Don't try and push them away. Accept them. Say, ooh, yes, ouch, that hurts. I remember, oh, I missed that person, or I'm so glad that situation is in my past, and then reestablish your grounding techniques. I have a lot of these if you want more. I can, DM me and I'll send you some more if you guys want these. Tip number four, take care of your health. So crucial. It's true that having a healthy body can increase your ability to cope with trauma and stress, so get plenty of sleep. Avoid, obviously, drugs, alcohol, substances that are going to take away or worsen your traumatic symptoms. Eat well. Be very cautious not to do things quick. Avoid fried foods, okay? Get yourself plenty of omega-3 fats. Do things that are going to be able to boost your mood. Reduce your stress by getting into, relaxation situations such as meditation, yoga, those breathing exercises. And please, please, seek professional help for trauma. Recovering from trauma takes time, and everyone heals at their own pace. But if it's months following a situation and those symptoms aren't letting up, you may need professional help. I would say seek help for trauma if you're having trouble functioning at work or at home, if you're suffering from severe fear, anxiety, or depression, if you're unable to form close, satisfying relationships, if you're experiencing terrifying memories, nightmares, or flashbacks, if you're avoiding, situations more and more, and you're doing that because everything reminds you of the trauma, if you're feeling emotionally numb or disconnected from others, if you're using substances, drugs, alcohol to feel better, please reach out and let's help you find someone that can help. Working through trauma can be so scary. It can be emotionally painful and potentially re-traumatizing. So the healing work is best undertaken with someone that's trained to help. finding the right counselor or therapist may take some time, and I'll help you if this is something that you feel you need or want. But it's very important that the therapist you choose has experience treating trauma. So one of the reasons I was trained in EMDR therapy is because I noticed that everyone I was working with that had an addiction-related issue had significant trauma. And now working in the private sector, by which people are coming to me less for addiction issues, guess what runs the same? Trauma in so many different avenues of life. The better quality of relationship you can establish with your counselor or therapist, the better your chances are overcoming the trauma and being able to feel comfortable and safe and respected with the person that you're allowing into your life. So when choosing a therapist, you've got to ask yourself, did you feel comfortable discussing your problems with that therapist? Did you feel like that therapist understood what you were talking about? Were your concerns taken serious, or were they minimized or dismissed? You know, when you're looking for a therapist, do you feel like you were treated with compassion and respect? Do you believe that you could grow and trust this therapist to help you get through the sensitive topics and the sensitive material that you need to process? Treatment for trauma is significant. And I've seen it now in so many different variations. But in order to heal from the psychological and emotional trauma, you'll need to resolve the unpleasant feelings and memories you've been longing to avoid. You may feel some pent-up emotions, and that fight-or-flight response might increase. You might have learned to regulate those strong emotions and rebuild your ability to trust, only to have some of those things brought forward when you start getting very genuine and real about processing that old trauma. Therapists that specialize in trauma, they may use a variety of approaches. And some of them are going to be determined on what works for you. And that's why it's crucial to be picky on who you pick to help. Some of the strategies that are used, somatic experiences, such as focusing on the body sensations rather than thoughts and memories about the traumatic event. And by concentrating on what's happening in your body, you can release some of that pent-up traumatic energy through maybe some crying, maybe some forms of physical release. It's kind of an interesting thing that this stuff stores in your body, people. Through some principles of EMDR, when there's a section by which we talk about doing a body scan, it is interesting to me to see where most of the people I work with store their trauma. Significantly, they fill it with a heavy chest, right? A broken heart. And it's interesting, I start peeling back some layers and start thinking, there's probably some real science behind this, because the people that I know of that typically have heart problems, when you start peeling back some of the situational issues they experience, you can see that a lot of them literally died of a broken heart. That's where their stress was held. Maybe they loved too much. Maybe they hurt deeply. Maybe they, provided for others so much because of that compassion and love that they forgot to take care of themselves. I've seen it so many times, you guys. There's also a modality of therapy called CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. It helps you process and evaluate thoughts and feelings about the trauma. But the one that I truly believe in, and having been trained and certified in, is EMDR, eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. It incorporates elements of cognitive behavioral therapy with eye movements and other forms of rhythmic right-left brain stimulation to help unfreeze traumatic memories. I've seen this work in the most challenging of cases, and my own included. When I first heard of EMDR, I did not believe in it. I thought, oh, baloney. But that big guy upstairs, he knew exactly what he was doing when he designed us, because we have everything we need to be able to process this stuff, but we just need to learn how. One of the things I enjoy doing on Team Addict Athlete is when we're running and we have some opportunities to do this, we process some of these heavy emotions while we're running or walking or hiking. I've seen people literally leave their trauma out on the race course. I've seen them leave it out on the trail. And it truly does work. And I'm going to do a deep dive on EMDR here soon. But helping a loved one deal with trauma, please, if you're listening to this and you know you have a loved one that's experienced trauma, you play a very crucial role in them being able to overcome it. But you've got to understand, you need to be patient and understanding. Healing from trauma takes time. be patient with the pace of that recovery. And remember that everyone's response to trauma is going to be different. Don't judge your loved one's reaction against your own responses to trauma. Offer practical support. And what I mean by that is to help your loved one get back into a normal, like, balanced routine. It may mean helping, you know, collect, you know, house chores, maybe go out shopping, maybe doing some work for them that may not be, you know, quite on your list, or simply just being available to talk. But offering practical support is more beneficial than you might know. Please, whatever you do, do not pressure your loved one into talking about the trauma, but be available if they want to talk. Some trauma survivors I've worked with find it difficult to talk about what happened. And if you force that on them, they will be re-exposed to that trauma. You need to just be available. I've seen this so many times with the physical attributes of people who go out on dog rescues, and they'll find a dog maybe that's, you know, a little aggressive, and it takes so much time for them to build the trust with that dog, you know, to make it safe, to feel like the dog is okay. Maybe, you know, sit with it for a while, move closer, go slow. If it barks and growls, not to be mad and shake the cage, but to take time, because that's going to be the most crucial aspect of this. Help your loved one to socialize and relax by encouraging them to participate in physical exercise, team addict athlete. Seek out people, friends, hobbies, and activities that bring pleasure. Do that together with them. Take them to lunch. Go out and talk about life. But again, no, unless they're ready, don't force them into that corner to process it. Don't take the trauma symptoms personally. What I mean by that, listeners, it's crucial. Please listen. Your loved one may become angry, may become irritable, maybe even withdrawn or emotionally distant. Remember that this is a result of the trauma and may not have anything to do with you or your relationship. To help a child recover from trauma, it's important to communicate openly. Let them know that it's normal to feel scared or upset. Your child may look at you for ways to focus, maybe cues on how they should respond to trauma. So let them deal with trauma the way they're going to. Be able to support them, pointing out symptoms in a positive way. Oh, I can see how this really still hurts. You know, I heard you crying last night. You're still thinking about that, huh? I know it's pretty hard. You know, what do you miss about that person? Well, what did you do with that person that made you laugh? Do you remember those things? Or I remember this about your friend. Those kind of things help so much. Don't be afraid to give love. There's so many delicate aspects to this. Some common reactions you might see, since we're on the subject, with a child dealing with trauma. You know, even if it's a teenager, you might see them, in maybe some regression. What I mean by that is many children need to return to an earlier stage where they felt safe. Younger children may start wetting the bed or want a bottle or want to be coddled by a parent. Older children may fear being alone. It's important to understand the patterns and parent comforting that takes place in these situations. Be cautious on how you respond, but do so not so much as you're too old to wet the bed, or I'm not giving you this, or I don't have time, but really be mindful about what their needs are. Thinking the event is their fault is a very big deal with kids, because they can't conceptualize, you know, like the should-haves, the could-haves, the would-haves. They take that as it's their fault because they should have, they could have, they would have. Children younger than 8 tend to think that if something goes wrong, it's their fault. So be clear if your child has a traumatic experience and understand that he or she did not cause the event, that the event happened. Sleeping issues are very big with kids, you know, even teenagers and adults for that matter, but more so with them, because they have a hard time understanding, well, how it all means, what it all means. They don't have the mental capacity to process some of this stuff. So some children have difficulty falling asleep, while others wake up frequently and have scary dreams. If you give your child maybe a stuffed animal or a soft blanket or a flashlight to take to bed, you know, try spending some time together in the evening, you know, having a new sleep routine, doing quiet activities like reading, be patient with these situations. It may take a while before your child can sleep through the night again, but understand that they will if you have the right foundations being set. They will feel very helpless, as will most of us, right? Being able to show them a sense of their own power by slowly putting them into positions and places by which they can exercise some of that leadership will be huge. You know, being active in their lives by writing thank you letters to people that may have been involved, or giving them a sense of power by turning that mess into a message somehow, thinking outside the box. I can help you if this is a situation you guys find. This is where Marissa and her recreational therapy comes in very handy. So, you know, as I'm looking at the time on this podcast and understanding that there's significant stuff that still needs to be discussed, I want to jump into, now we've talked about what post-traumatic stress is, I want to share with you my thoughts on CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress. It's a little different than maybe, you know, PTSD, by which it's an action or event or something scary. Complicated or complex post-traumatic stress is very different because the mechanism of trauma doesn't happen in a moment. It happens over very long periods of time. So the other thing about complex post-traumatic stress disorder is that it is relatively new and it is not recognized right now in the DSM-5, which is the clinical diagnostic kind of like encyclopedia for doctors and counselors and therapists. So doctors may still diagnose you or a loved one with post-traumatic stress instead of complex PTSD, but I want you to understand the difference between the two. And I think as we get more information and as we see things in specific lights, we're going to see more and more of these two becoming more separated, because it's believed that CPTSD is caused by severe repetitive abuse over a longer period of time. The abuse often occurs at a vulnerable time in a person's life, such as early childhood or adolescence. Okay, so you can see how this would be different if it's a prolonged experience of trauma rather than an event. And it can absolutely create lifelong challenges. No, so the trauma from that stress and that situation can have a number of effects on the brains that we're seeing is different than traditional PTSD. And I've read some research that suggests that trauma is associated with long-lasting change in key areas of the brain, including the oblongata, the hippocampus. Now, those are some pretty intense things, such as the prefrontal cortex. Think about it, okay? The types of long-term traumatic events can occur and cause CPTSD in the areas of child abuse, child neglect or abandonment, long-term exposure to domestic violence, you know, mother-father relationship issues. We've seen it now come to forward in areas by which genocide has taken place, childhood suffering, such as torture or slavery, you know, sexual abuse, those kind of situations. These types of events create an individual in a position by which they don't think they have the ability to escape. Think about how long the exposure to trauma could be. So complex PTSD is going to be a lot different than a single episode or experience. This is a prolonged, long-term exposure, which we are seeing more and more of. The treatment and diagnosis, I think, can be very similar, but I also understand that a lot more therapy, counseling, and quite possibly, if not, medications be introduced to help put that individual in a position by which they can, you know, have better outcomes. There's still a lot out on what this is going to be, but treatment for complex PTSD is going to take time. And I've noticed this because I've seen situations where it's taken individuals much longer and they're more resistant to things like EMDR and therapy because they have adopted a mindset that it's such a way of life and it's become such a burden to bear that it is now my life. And so can you think about how sad it is that there's been a situation where a child has been beaten or abused or sexually abused in such a way that they think that is the world, that they truly believe that that is their world? It's almost hard for me to wrap my head around. Having experienced some of this myself, I can have a lot of sympathy and empathy for people in that situation. But what if that rescue doesn't come? What if only by the grace of intervention are they freed from it? They may truly believe that that is their world. So treatment for complex PTSD is going to take time, and it's so important to find ways to manage these symptoms and conditions and strategies that might help them overcome and manage their recovery. Like PTSD, complex PTSD often leads people to withdraw from friends and family, you know. But again, having a strong social network is going to be crucial. Same things of practicing mindfulness are going to be crucial. Writing down their thoughts and processing those things can definitely help by keeping a journal and things of that nature. And a lot of the things that we'll see will still work. Just know that it's going to take a lot more time, a lot more patience. It's going to take a lot more investment emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally. But these people can get help. So as we learn more about the prolonged exposure to trauma rather than some of the impulse and some of the smaller mechanisms that cause some of those traumatic memories to be experienced, this is going to be significant. And we're going to see more and more of this as we start seeing our world become less and less emotionally safe. We live in a world by which everyone has very staunch opinions, and so, you know, prolonged abuse by nature could be a lot of different variations. It could be, you know, spiritual abuse. It could be physical abuse. You know, child abuse. All these things, people. But I'm a firm believer that with the right applications of principle and the right people that could be in place, people can overcome these things. For the sake of time, we will lead into some of these coping mechanisms and what EMDR specifically can do for not just post-traumatic stress disorder and trauma, but for a myriad of other issues in another podcast. But I wanted to take a deep dive into this today for you because a lot of addictions are based on the foundations of some kind of trauma that has been experienced. Being able to know what trauma does and know that none of us make it out of this life without some degree of trauma, and how some process it and others seem to hold on to it, can greatly impact your way of life. I wanted to do this for you for quite some time because I find that this is the mechanism by which most people are introduced into the substance of their choice, because the pain they've experienced and the inability to understand how to process it becomes so overwhelming that they find a drink or a substance or an action that will replace that coping feeling. And then for that moment, they can feel good without thinking bad. The problem, as we've seen, and the sad experience that we know, is that that only lasts for so long before it too becomes trauma and it too becomes part of our downfall. But because we remember that it worked so well at one time, we continue to use it until something significantly impairs that. That is why we exist on Team Addict Athlete. That is why this team was established, is to help you overcome those issues and more by erasing the addiction and the trauma and replacing it with things of greater value. Our erase and replace philosophy is very real, and it is very powerful when applied in the correct position. So listeners, I want to thank you for giving me your attention today on this sensitive topic. I want to thank Radio Ronin and the Radio Ronin Network for all that you do for Team Addict Athlete. And until next time, please go turn that mess into a very powerful message.